Austin, Texas. It's Dave and Ike.
The final 10 hours of our 34-hour broadcast to try to pull back this war that is developing. And we're going to talk about the current state of war. Is it on? Is it off? We get back and forth information about this. President Trump has said, well, I didn't say when it's going to happen. So hopefully that's a good sign. And we're going to talk about what President Trump had to say when he was candidate Trump about Hillary Clinton and about her plans for Syria, how that would result in World War III. And he was absolutely right at the time. And the American people understand that. Supposedly, they've gotten a lot of calls at the White House asking them to not rush into this. And I've got to say, it's amazing to me, as I said yesterday, that we would rush into this without any evidence, without any investigation. Because even if it was a gas attack, how do we justify prolonging a war that is ending right now? And, of course, that's why we had this attack. You understand that. There was absolutely no motivation for Syria to do this. This has become the preferred propaganda of the West. Oh, look, there was a gas attack. There was one in Salisbury. There was one in Syria and so forth. Did not happen. I have talked at length about the nonsense about this Salisbury, UK attack, how that has been disproven multiple times. We're not going to go into that again today, but we're going to talk about what the UK has done in the past. We got Tony Blair out here. The guy who sold us the Iraq War is out there saying we don't need to have Parliament engaged in this. No, let's not have a debate. Let's not have an investigation. Let's just shoot the missiles off, which is what we did in 2017. And now even Secretary of Defense Mattis said, didn't happen in 2017. That wasn't sarin gas. Didn't happen. We just shot those missiles off and, you know, pull them back now. I don't know. But if we're going to continue this war that has already killed 500,000 men, women, and children, and we're going to do this because of unverified claims by the Army of Jihad, by the White Helmets telling us that this has happened, this is absolute insanity. But we're also going to take a look at the larger picture around Facebook and around social media. You know, it's a meme that somebody picked up on the internet. It's floating around DARPA's life log. And said, oh, look at this. DARPA had this project called Life Log, where they would keep track of everything in your life. Everything in your life. Everywhere you went, the people you liked, the people you knew, your political affiliations and so on. They keep track of all of that. And it was part of the total information awareness. Does that ring a bell to you? That was so creepy. And the logo that DARPA, that created all this stuff, DARPA created Life Log. DARPA created the total information awareness, and their logo and that title were so creepy that Congress defunded it within a year. And then within a couple of months, we had Facebook appear. And we had some people who sat on the board of DARPA, very high up in DARPA. Didn't have a board, but people who were executives on that. We had the guy who was part of Incutel, which is the venture capital firm of the CIA, making strategic investments to spy on you. And he had some connections to another organization, and these people became major investors in Facebook. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the genetics of Facebook. And we're going to talk about the fact that this is now being rolled out in China. Very ambitious plans. They call it Smart Eyes. It comes from a communist slogan of Mao. Smart Eyes everywhere. Surveillance everywhere, including the home. This is Orwellian, folks, and it is literally true, and it's going to happen in China by 2020. It's already happening here. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Friday the 13th, the Friday before Income Tax Day. We're going to have IRS whistleblower Joe Bannister joining us in the program. And I thought it was kind of funny seeing this story up on the Drudge Report, End of the World 2018. The rapture will occur on April 23rd, says a guy. Okay, whatever. Nobody knows the date or time, folks. But as somebody said, why couldn't it be before tax day? And I said, well, that's evidence of a post-tribulation rapture there, right there, if that were to happen. But we're going to be talking to Joe Bannister, and we're also going to be talking about the life log, the DARPA prototype for Facebook. Are there connections? Well, you know what? Whether you believe that this was a deliberate conspiracy to move this away from DARPA after all the criticism for total information awareness, and maybe it was just a coincidence that the day they shut down their life log program, Facebook started. And then it was funded with a lot of people who had connections to DARPA, to NQTEL, which is the CIA venture capital firm. Whether you believe that's just a coincidence or not, the goals and the methods are the same. And you should be just as creeped out about the fact that Facebook is doing this because, you know what, folks? They don't even have to get a search warrant. I mean, all that information that you put out there, you put that out there in the public domain. That information can be scraped by law enforcement. It can be scraped by criminals. It can be scraped by anybody. And it is. It is scraped by people. I mean, just think of all the reports you hear every week about, oh, look, so-and-so took a trip with his family. They went shooting at a shooting range. And he was happy, took a picture of a gun. And then he gets suspended from school because a student puts on Facebook or social media a picture of him with a gun at the shooting range with his family, learning how to use it responsibly. This is how this kind of information can be abused. But there's other ways it can be abused. And the way that we're seeing it abused is the way that's being used right now by Facebook. The senators can come up and they can play all these games and say, well, you know, you're shutting down conservative media. And of course they are. He denies it. He's lying. But they are using this to censor political speech. And this is already going on in China. You know, as I pointed out yesterday, one of the senators said to him, boy, you really have been successful in a very short time. That's amazing. Can you imagine this happening anywhere else but America? And Zuckerberg kind of paused and he goes, yeah, China. I could do it in China. And it's like, yeah, he could do it in China because China is doing exactly the same type of thing. Total information awareness. They're going to have a network in place by 2020 that will have surveillance everywhere in public as well as in the home. That's right. Isn't it so convenient that you had all these television manufacturers putting all this the cameras in your home television sets, you know, just in case the government wants to tap into that and watch what you're doing. It's all just rolling into place. This is wonderful synergy between big corporations and big government, isn't it? Bringing us Big Brother worldwide. And so we're going to take a quick look at what's planned and what is already rolling out in China because they are the beta test for this worldwide surveillance system. A world that thinks that it's God because it's got the three attributes of God, right? It's omniscient. It knows everything about you. It's omnipresent. It is everywhere watching you all the time, even in your home. And it is omnipotent to shut down anything that you do. You don't pay your fines or you say the wrong thing on the internet. You don't travel. You don't go anywhere. You don't get a job. You might be invited for tea with the People's Party so they can have a little discussion with your attitude. You've been noticed, comrade. And oh, by the way, I was noticed by the comrades at YouTube yesterday in our program. Yesterday I talked about what I'm going to be talking about again today. But we got some updates on what's happening today. But I basically talked about what was happening with Syria. That's the topic of this 34-hour broadcast. Can we stop the war? And it looks like maybe there is some hesitation on the part of President Trump. We're going to give you out the phone number to call the White House in just a moment as we go over this, because you need to make your voice heard. President Trump, as he was a candidate, was saying that Hillary Clinton's plans in Syria would lead to World War III. And yet, what they're proposing now is even more involvement than Hillary Clinton was proposing. She was proposing a no-fly zone, which everybody said that's going to bring us in conflict with the Russian Air Force and so forth. Well, you know, they're planning right now is far more than that. And the war, for all practical purposes, is over. Can't we let the people of Syria rest in peace? Do we have to gin this war up yet again? I talked about that. I talked about Facebook, and then I got a message from YouTube. And I put it up on Twitter. We have manually reviewed your live broadcast, because what we do on our YouTube channel, Real News with David Knight, and I shot a report about it there as well. But what we put up on our channel for this program, Real News with David Knight on YouTube, we have the program running live, and we begin it at the time that the program starts, and it cycles through for the 3 hours, then it repeats another 3 hours. And it does that throughout the 24-hour period, so it's just running continuously. They said, we have manually reviewed your program, and we have decided that it is not acceptable for our advertisers. It'll still be live, but there will be no advertising, no monetizing of this. I looked at this and I thought, well, this is strange. I didn't think we had any commercials. I didn't think we were monetized. And so I asked the people to check it. They said, yeah, no, we didn't monetize it. And I looked at this. It's like, so why are they telling me that it's not monetized when we never had any monetization on our channel? And yet we were manually reviewed. I said, this is basically just you've been noticed, comrade. I remember that scene vividly from Dr. Zhivago. You know, when I was a kid and I watched that film, the love story, none of that had any effect on me. The adultery or what, none of that registered. I was looking at what happened to him under communism. I was creeped out, amazed, shocked by Dr. Zhivago returning home. He was a very wealthy family doctor and so forth. He returns home to his mansion, and there's an army of people living in it. And the family that are the true owners of the house are relegated to a corner of the attic. And he's trying to swallow this without saying anything, because he's got a communist rep that is in charge of the house, watching him like a hawk for any kind of reaction. And at one point, he gets a little bit upset about something, and the guy comes over to him, gets in his face, and says, you've been noticed, comrade. You've been noticed. Yeah. That's what I got from YouTube yesterday. That's the you've been noticed, comrade. That's what China is doing to its people with the social credits, with the Smart Eyes program that's going to be rolling out by 2020 universally in all public spaces, all private homes. It's you've been noticed, comrade. So it's not, power doesn't just come out of the barrel of a gun. It also comes out of the lens of a camera, doesn't it? It also comes out of those people who manually review and vet everything that we do in our life and stand in judgment as to whether or not we are acceptable. That is the position that Zuckerberg and these other people in Silicon Valley and California have put themselves. Now, they've been put there, and I think it's very important to tie this all together. When we look at DARPA LifeLog, and the fact that it got shut down, the Total Information Awareness Program got shut down because it was such a stench in people's minds. They weren't ready for that yet. And then we got Facebook, and we got used to this. And now they're coming to the point where they're going to come back and have the government do it again. They've been able to get all this information from Facebook. First of all, they can publicly scrape it. But secondly, if they want to pull this information off, they can just send a text to Facebook and say, give it to us. And if Facebook violates your privacy by sending stuff that is not visually still up, they go back through their history and go back through your history and send them stuff that you've already deleted and violate your privacy. You know, you can't sue them. That's why the government worked so hard trying to push through CISPA twice, trying to push through SOPA, ACTA, PIPA. Finally, they changed it to CISA. And all these bills that they ran through, all the ones that I just named, were all to take away any ability of citizens to sue Facebook and other people like them for violating your privacy. But now we've got a statist Democrat senator in California, the same guy who pushed through mandatory vaccines. He wants California to do all the vetting, the same stuff that Facebook is doing. They're going to do it directly. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is our final 10 hours of the emergency 34-hour broadcast we have here at InfoWars, the new world war. Are we going to have a new world war? President Trump, when he was running for office, said Hillary Clinton's policies in Syria will bring us to a World War III. And now we see what is being talked about is even worse than what Hillary Clinton was talking about at the time. As an example of what's going on and the rush to get involved in this, Exhibit A, as I've said for a long time, is Theresa May, and Exhibit B is Nikki Haley, or maybe it's the other way around. Take your pick. But Theresa May already started moving submarines before she even talked to her cabinet, and of course she said that she's not going to be bothered to have Parliament get involved in this. That would be kind of cumbersome, you know. You'd have to have a debate. They might ask for evidence. We don't want to have that happen. Let's just go ahead and do what we want to do. Let's not let any discussion or deliberation or investigation get in the way of our agenda. And so she said she'll not be seeking a vote in Parliament. This was a couple of days ago. Government sources there said Britain was doing everything necessary to be able to fire Tomahawk cruise missiles from submarines against military targets in Syria. Meanwhile, most of the opposition has come just from Jeremy Corbyn, the socialist. And this is why, you know, when I look at this, and I my wife said, do you realize that you retweeted Cenk Uygur from the Young Turks? I said, yeah, because he was right about the war. And I said, and I retweeted Tucker Carlson because he'd write about the war. And I don't really care what else they're talking about. If I agree with you on a particular issue, I will stand with you on that issue. This is an important issue. And it's about time we start pulling people together based on the issues and not clubs. I'm not in a club. I don't belong to a Republican Party or a Libertarian Party or a Democrat Party. I'm for liberty. And I'm for liberty on all issues. I'm for peace in all places. And if anybody will join me on any of those issues, I will join with them. I don't really care if they are subsumed in some kind of a groupthink in the rest of their policy. And so you got Jeremy Corbyn out there saying the right thing, just like Cenk Uygur, and many people on the right as well. I mean, you started talking about it. It's not just Tucker Carlson. We got people like Pat Buchanan. Sarah Palin is coming out saying the right thing about this. Many people are joining this and saying, well, wait a minute. This isn't what we voted for. This isn't a wise policy. This is business as usual by the military-industrial complex. We don't want to see this happening. Corbyn says Parliament should always be given a say on military action. Absolutely right. But then we got Tony Blair coming out again. Yeah, have you heard from Tony Blair for a while? Most people worldwide haven't. I don't know. Maybe people in England have. I don't know what he's been doing. You know, maybe he's been hanging out at Bohemian Grove or something. But anyway, he comes out lobbying for this war again. And this was the guy who was the point man, the pitch man for the Iraq war. And they did a long report in the UK exposing his lies. And then we've got a report here from RT. Good for RT for pulling this together. And again, this is the discussion that we've had this whole week, when Alex Jones and Lee Stranahan and others from InfoWars went to the National Press Club, and you had these idiots who were members of the press saying, well, I'm not going to go on RT. It's like, well, would you go on CNN? Would you go on Fox? I mean, they've got their own viewpoints as well, and we know what their viewpoints are. But would you go on there and talk about what you believe? Oh, no, I would never go on RT or Sputnik or anything like that, or InfoWars. Wouldn't go on any of that stuff. No, no, I'm above all of that. And Alex said, well, I went on CNN. I don't agree with anything they have to say. And Lee Stranahan got up and said, shame on you. You should know better than that. You should know that it's the facts that matter. Just like it's the issues that matter, not the political party, not who says it, but whether it's true or not. And whether it's the right thing to do. And so good for RT for exposing. This is a great video. They show him pushing this war, and then they rewind this to go back and let's take a look at Tony Blair when he was pushing the Iraq war. Here's that video.
Well, the man who led his own war, his own country into a war under questionable circumstances, Tony Blair, has weighed in over Syria. It seems he still believes military interventions are a good idea.
This would be action in support of military intervention by the US. If you don't respond to this to the use of chemical weapons against civilians, then obviously, you know, we're ignoring what the international community has said, which is that this is unacceptable and those that use such methods should be held to account.
Pause that a second. Okay. Yeah, he's going to rewind now. You're going to hear Tony Blair before. But I have to say, use of military weapons against civilians or whatever. Yeah, I just don't understand the mentality that it's okay to kill 500,000 people with bombs and machine guns and maybe cutting their heads off in ISIS-held territory, because that was, we were fighting for ISIS, right? They are the rebels who are fighting for regime change. They are our proxies in that war. And so it's okay to use a machete, to use a gun, to use a bomb to kill people. Don't use any chemical weapons. And if you, you know, kill 500,000 people with bombs, that's okay. We're not going to pay attention. But you gas 40 people, even if that's true, you gas 40 people and we've got to get involved in that. But here's the Tony Blair that was selling the war in Iraq.
Forces to take part in military action in Iraq. This threat is real, growing, and of an entirely different nature to any conventional threat to our security that Britain has faced before. The program in the form that we thought it was did not exist in the way that we thought. So I can apologize for that. I can also apologize, by the way, for some of the mistakes in planning and certainly our mistake in our understanding of what would happen once you remove the regime.
Oh, yeah.
For all of this, I express more sorrow, regret, and apology than you may ever know or can believe.
I can't believe the Iraq inquiry, known as the Chilcot Report, was published in 2016. It uncovered so-called mistakes in the UK's six-year-long campaign in Iraq. It revealed there were no imminent threats to the UK from Saddam Hussein. It also highlighted that Blair's certainty Iraq was stockpiling weapons of mass destruction, including chemical and biological agents, was unjustified.
Yeah, so to sum it up, he said, well, those programs didn't exist. It was a fantasy that we went to war. And they said mistakes were made in planning. In other words, the tactics that they use are totally wrong. And then we didn't understand what would happen after regime change. In other words, they didn't have a strategy. So their justification was a lie. Their tactics were a total failure. Their strategy, if they'd even thought of it, was wrong. And now we're doing it all again. And he comes back and profusely apologizes for all that. But he's doing it again. Yeah, I don't know how I can apologize enough for this. And it's like, well, you know what? We don't believe you. Didn't believe him when he apologized, and certainly don't believe him now that he's doing it again. And he comes out and he says that the prime minister doesn't need MP's approval to strike Syria. Maybe they decided that after all the lies that Tony Blair had told people to get involved, that people would be a little bit skeptical of this one because they haven't done an investigation of this either. And so maybe we'll just skip that whole parliamentary debate thing. He said, I think in circumstances where action presumably would be a form of air action rather than ground action, I don't think strictly parliamentary approval is necessary. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, because if we can just fly bombs in and kill people, that's okay. If we put some of our people on the ground, maybe not. What's going to happen when they've got autonomous killing robots? Oh, we can just have them do whatever they want to, wherever, constant war. We'll be right back.
In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
I was just playing for you a clip of Tony Blair, shameless warmonger, lying to the public, lying to the world about the Iraq War, talking about how they had mistakes were made in the execution of the war, and they didn't really expect what would happen afterwards. They had regime change. There would be total chaos. Oh, didn't think about any of that stuff. Profusely apologizing after a report came out calling him on this. But now he's pitching it again. And as he said, the prime minister doesn't need MP's approval to strike Syria. As I said, going to break. He justifies this on the basis that, well, if we're just going to send bombs and missiles and stuff in, we don't need any approval from the parliament to go bomb other countries, as if that has no consequences. You know, the day is coming when Western countries aren't going to be able to kill people elsewhere without it blowing back. Big time. Big time. You want to call it sowing what you reap. People aren't Christians, say karma. But, you know, that is a principle of life. And they are storing up wrath on these countries for doing that to other countries. Just, yeah, we can do that. So let's just shoot off the missiles that we have. And he justifies it based on the fact that they're not putting their troops on the ground and in jeopardy. And so, as I said, let's think about what this means for the very near future, because we're rapidly rolling out automated killing machines, autonomous killer drones, which we're now using to assassinate people all the time. And as we roll out these machines where they can conduct warfare from halfway around the world, or as they can roll out autonomous killing robots, just send them into the air and kill everybody. And then if it gets out of hand, we just say, hey, you know, software error, sorry. That kind of thing happens. It's in development, but we're getting better on this. And that, you know, same thing we hear about Elon Musk whenever he has one of his cars crash somebody into a barrier and kill him. That's not my fault. And we're getting better all the time. This is going to be so much safer than people driving cars. You think that the wars are going to be so much safer when people don't have any skin in the game? No. And this is where this is headed, folks. We'll do it without deliberation. We'll do it without cause, and we will unleash holy terror on whoever we wish. That's what's coming. That's the mentality of people like Tony Blair and Theresa May. And, of course, the other part of it is that they know they can't pitch this nonsense to people again. But he goes on to say, failure to act would be giving, quote, carte blanche to the Syrian regime to do whatever is necessary to retake opposition areas by force. Think about that for a minute. So if we don't act, then the Syrian government is going to be able to continue to purge ISIS strongholds, Al-Qaeda strongholds, the army of jihad strongholds. And we don't want that to happen. We don't want them to retake these areas that were previously held by ISIS, where they would have the Black Stadium, and they would just haul people into the Black Stadium, and they would torture them, and they would cut off their hands and feet or have public executions and chop their heads off. We wouldn't want to have the Syrian government retake those places from those type of people who were our allies, our surrogates, the people that John McCain was meeting with, arming and funding. Oh, we don't want those people to have any power taken away from them. That's what he's talking about. You know, who controlled those opposition areas? So what is going on with this? Tony Blair was the shameless, some people call him the chief architect. No, he was a shameless pitchman for war during the Iraq War. The guy that has taken his place, much to the chagrin of Theresa May, is Francis Macron. And, you know, I guess she thought that she was going to be having the inside track there with her Salisbury scare. But that didn't do it. And so as President Trump was saying, we're going to get out of Syria, we're going to get out, and the Pentagon, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, didn't want him to remove the thousands of troops that we put in a country to invade and to keep this war going. He said, no, we're done. ISIS is defeated. This war is wrapping up. Let's get our troops out of there. And you had Israel and you had Saudi Arabia because they want to take out Syria so they can go after Iran, the greater war. And that's the path that has been planned for the longest time, as Wesley Clark said. And so all these people contact Macron, and he's the one who was pitching all of the stuff that evidently got Trump so fired up that he started sending off the animal tweets about Assad. RT reports, actually, this is Finian Cunningham out of Northern Ireland. He said, France's President Macron raised the stakes for war in Syria by claiming to have proof of chemical weapons. And Bloomberg has described Emmanuel Macron as Trump's, quote, go-to guy in Europe. And it's like, wow, if Bloomberg is right about that, if Macron has that kind of influence on Trump, that is one of the scariest things I've seen in the last week as well. It's not just this insanity about Syria, but the fact that Macron would have any influence at all with President Trump. This guy is one of the most hardcore globalists you could find. He's a banker posing as a socialist leader. Even the people in the Socialist Party there don't like him because he's turned against the workers and so forth. But he's one of these Goldman Sachs types of technocrats that they took the European Union, took away elected governments and put these types of people in place That's who Macron is. He is the ultimate establishment guy for the globalists. And if he is the go-to guy that Trump turns to, that Trump trusts more than any other European leader, as Bloomberg says, that is truly scary. They said when the news alleged chemical weapons incident broke, it was Macron who Trump telephoned first, much to the chagrin of the British and their presumed special relationship with Washington. And so he became the pitchman for this war. In a series of follow-up calls, the French reportedly exchanged intelligence with the White House to show that chemical munitions had been used against civilians by the Syrian government forces of President Bashar Assad. Now, I want you to all understand that the French didn't have any access to this. The World Health Organization didn't have any access to this. The New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN, who are pushing this war, didn't have any access to it. The only people that were putting this information out there were the White Helmets and the Army of Jihad. The only people who had any access to that area were the Syrian government that had it surrounded, that had been bombing and strafing the area for months, had it under siege and so forth. And then these people who were inside, and they claimed that there was a chemical gas attack at the very last minute, just and only a day or so later, the Syrians took over the area. So they knew that the collapse was imminent. Nobody had access and still doesn't have access to this. You had the World Health Organization out there saying, this is awful. 500 people have been injured in all of this and so forth. There's no justification for any of this. The hospital there, the Red Crescent, as well as the hospital said, we saw no chemical attack victims that we treated whatsoever. So this is all coming from these two organizations that have put this out there before, that are allied with the rebels. And the French are passing this on. They don't have any special intelligence. And they're feeding this to President Trump. Francis Macron then weighed in with his categorical claim to, quote, have proof that chemical weapons were used by the Syrian regime. This was all the time this was happening. U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis said, well, we're still looking at this. We're still making an assessment. But what the precise French intelligence on the Douma incident is based on and from where it was sourced is not publicly substantiated. It is unverified, just as everything we're getting from these governments nowadays is, isn't it? And so when we look at this, what is Macron's position in this? Well, of course, he is selling the position of the globalist. He's a strong European Union guy. He is a strong guy to create TPP and TTIP and the Paris Climate Accord, all these sovereignty-destroying things, all these things that destroy nation states and subsume us into supranational organizations that are part of the world government. And, of course, he's playing a more immediate game with the Saudis, currying favor with them, having the crown prince come by. He's got big contracts coming up with the Saudi prince. And the Saudis want us to be their proxies, just like we use Al-Qaeda and ISIS as our proxies. This little kind of, pyramid game that we're playing here. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Stay with me, and I'm going to give you the number to call the White House and tell them that you don't want to have war. You know, Smedley Butler said, the only thing worth fighting for is defense of your home and the Bill of Rights. Anything else is organized crime. He called it a racket, but today we'd say organized crime, and it is. It is a crime. I'm not a pacifist. I'll fight back if I'm attacked, but that's a Christian principle. It was Augustine's principle of just war. You don't fight unless somebody attacks you first. We haven't been attacked. We weren't attacked with Iraq. It was absolutely bogus. But we now got the same people pushing us to be their unpaid mercenaries. You know, if the French and the British and the Israelis and the Saudis are aching for war, let them do it. We're not going to be the Navy and the Air Force of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And we have to remind President Trump that he said Clinton's foreign policy plan would start World War III. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to remind you of what President Trump said when he was running as a candidate, because he was absolutely right then. And maybe he is backing off now. This article from Andy Warr, and we reported this yesterday as President Trump tweeted it out. He says, well, it might be fairly soon, because earlier he'd said, get ready, we're coming in. We're going to take your stuff out, Russia. We got new, fast, smart missiles, whatever. Okay. And we're going to, you shouldn't ally yourself with that animal Assad. Well, as I point out in anti-war, there's a sudden level of awareness about the war that they were itching to start just a few days prior isn't being officially explained. Reports suggest that the White House has been inundated with phone calls over the possible attack on Syria, and that those phone calls were overwhelmingly opposed to the idea. That's right. President Trump, your base does not want a war. Your base did not vote for war. If we wanted war, we would have voted for Hillary Clinton. Remember Julian Assange? He said, we know that Hillary Clinton will get us involved in many, many more wars, maybe World War III. She's very dangerous, and she's a corrupt criminal. We don't know about President Trump, but we know that Hillary Clinton will do this. Well, President Trump, it's time to show us that you're not going to do that. They said they went on to say that the administration is unlikely to admit being swayed by public opinion, but the rapid shift shows that it is having a palpable effect on them, which isn't to say that we've won, which isn't to say that we've won the peace, which isn't to say that we've removed the threat of war. But I have told you all along that all these people, think of it as a canoe, and you've got the people of America on one side of the canoe, and you've got the deep state, the military industrial complex, and all these globalist leaders around the world on the other side of the canoe. They have big paddles, and they're paddling as hard as they can. And if you, the people of America, and there's more of you than there are of them, if you, the people of America, just sit there and say, that's all right, President Trump's in the back, he's got the rudder, we're okay, that isn't going to work. You've got to do some paddling, too. When we get into situations where President Trump looks like he's getting a bit uncertain, a bit wobbly or shaky, or he's getting a lot of pressure from the other side, you let him feel the pressure from your side. You push back against these other people. You paddle on your side of the boat. And then he'll be able to steer. But if you sit there and say, it's okay, he's got it, he's playing 4D chess, we don't need to get involved. We can just sit back and he'll do everything for us from Washington. Well, then you deserve to lose your freedom. You deserve to lose your life, and you deserve to lose this country because you won't do a thing to protect it. You want to pick up the phone and call? Here's the number. 202-456-1414. 202-456-1414. Or look it up. Is that too hard to do as a citizen? I just gave you the number so you know who to call. This is what President Trump said when he was a candidate. He said, Russia is a nuclear country, but a country where the nukes work. Ah, that kind of sounds like the back and forth that he had on Twitter with Kim Jong-un, where Kim Jong-un said, I have a nuclear button or whatever, and Trump said, I've got a button on my desk that's bigger and mine works. And of course, the New York Times is quick to come out and say, that's fake news. He doesn't have a button on his desk. It's like, yeah, okay, okay. No sense of humor with those people. They don't understand what's going on. But President Trump said, no, the nukes work in Russia. He said this before he did any of the stuff with Kim Jong-un about the tweets. And he said at the time, and I'm looking at an old article from the BBC, presidential candidate Trump has said his rival Hillary Clinton's foreign policy plan in Syria would trigger World War III. Yep. He also said the U.S. should focus on defeating so-called Islamic State rather than removing Syria's president. Yep. And it was looking very good. Last summer, President Trump said, you know what, we're going to stop the CIA arming people in Syria. We're going to let our military continue to have arms so they can fight against these ISIS strongholds, but we're going to stop this CIA program that John McCain put in place. And he did. And it didn't take very long when the Russian and the Syrian forces were fighting them, when we were fighting them instead of fighting the Russian and Syrian forces, when we started fighting ISIS instead of fighting for regime change, it didn't take very long for this war to turn around. And it's basically wrapped up at this point. Unless we can start it again. Unless we can start it again. That's why they're pushing so hard with this false agenda. Mrs. Clinton had proposed a no-fly zone over Syria, and the top U.S. military chief said at the time that could spell conflict with Russian jets in the region. So you think that these policies that they're proposing right now won't cause conflict? That's what everybody's so concerned about. The Clinton campaign accused Mr. Trump of playing to America's fears. See? Oh, You're playing to America's fears. You're telling everybody this is going to, yeah, and now we're hearing this from the same people. Now, these people who supported Hillary Clinton in pushing for war, broader war in Syria that could lead to World War III, as President Trump said when he was candidate. Now they're supporting and pushing and urging President Trump to go ahead and do what they were hoping that Hillary Clinton would be able to do. President Trump said, you're going to end up in World War III over Syria if we listen to Hillary Clinton. You're not fighting Syria anymore. You're fighting Syria, Russia, and Iran. All right? He said, Russia is a nuclear country, but a country where the nukes work, as opposed to other countries that just talk and don't have buttons that work. He also suggested Mrs. Clinton would be unable to talk with Russian President Vladimir Putin after her sharp criticism of him. Trump said, how's she going to go back and negotiate with a man who she just has made so evil? I guess we could say the same thing about Nikki Haley, about Theresa May, and about now departed H.R. McMaster, who was so adamant, don't congratulate him on the election. It's like, that's just basic common sense and tact, and even something you might call diplomacy. It's like, oh, congratulations on the election or whatever. Now let's talk about limiting nuclear arms and war. Oh, no, no, no. We're not going to do any of that. Let's just, you know, come after him like Nikki Haley and Theresa May. Trump went on to say that people are very angry with the leadership of this party, Republican Party, because this is an election that we will win 100% if we have support from the top. But then he went on to say, but I think we're going to win it anyway. Yeah, President Trump didn't get that support from the top, but he did win it anyway. And you won it with him because of the things that he said. And you have to call that number, 202-456-1414, and say, do what we voted for you to do. Do what you know is right. Don't let these people gaslight you, or don't sell us out, or whatever the hell is going on with this stuff. I'm sick and tired of the palace intrigue. Just take a straight course. Tell us the truth. Do what you said you're going to do. Be a man of integrity. Let's stop this vacillating and this Twitter diplomacy. I'm tired of it. Let's play a clip about the evidence of Syrian chemical attack that purportedly Macron was sharing with President Trump. Video.
We're going to escalate this to a great degree, it seems to me. You got to have a debate in Congress. That's what the Constitution clearly spells out. Let's have that debate. I mean, we should have a debate on all AUMFs. We've been functioning under one in Afghanistan now for what, 17 years. And so it's time to redebate all those. I'm totally think that's consistent and consistent with the Constitution and what should take place. But I also understand that what Assad did, this is as evil and as wrong as it gets, and it deserves some kind of response. But you're right, Chris. We should debate it in Congress.
Yeah, we just don't need to play this game of having to constantly kowtow to an unproven narrative of allegations. Let's have that debate. And part of that debate is going to say, I haven't made up my mind yet because we haven't had an investigation, and I need to see some evidence, and I need to see where we have justification to go to war. That's the kind of debate that we need to have. All right, we're nearly at the end of the segment, and I want to tell you about the 34-hour InfoWars store specials that we have as part of our Stop the New World War. We have limited-time specials, including things like Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine. As we pointed out, this is limited supply. We may not be able to get this anymore. It's now 25% off. We also have the Alexa Pure Breeze, $50 off. We have Cellforce, 50% off. Bodies, back in stock, 25% off. And we have Immune Gargle Combo. All sizes of Immune Gargle, 50% off. Take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what funds this program. That's what keeps us independent and our information free.
Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm going to get in the next hour. We're going to talk about James Comey. Excerpts are being teased out from his book, so he can make the most amount of money off of this. And this guy has reached a new level of low. He may be 6'8", but this guy is a very small man. Trying to justify what he did, which is unjustifiable. You want to talk about loyalty? You want to talk about integrity? You were done, Comey, when you got on and said Hillary Clinton has committed all of these felonies, but I'm not going to do anything about it. It's not in our interest to prosecute her over this. But don't you try this at home. And then his Justice Department put someone like the individual who was on a submarine I interviewed, and President Trump has now pardoned him. That's integrity. And there doesn't need to be two standards of justice for people. That's what James Comey stands for. When you have double standards, that's not integrity. When you violate the rule of law for important people, that's not loyalty to your oath that you took to the Constitution, Comey. So he's got this book, and I want to go over some of the stuff that he says in it, but I also want to go over some things about Comey that I tweeted about yesterday. Because this guy is a phony and a fraud. Before we, and I got a couple more things that I want to say about Syria. While we're at the news break here, I just want to talk about how dangerous things are. You know, we've got this Russian conspiracy that's been used to tie up the Trump administration, try to destroy the Trump administration, try to impeach President Trump and so forth. And of course, the other person that they're coming out really, they're coming after really heavily is Scott Pruitt at the EPA. Because unlike most of President Trump's appointments, he has been on point. He has been on fire. He has been effective. He has been rolling back abusive, unconstitutional overreach legislation from the EPA left and right, and he is so hated by these people because the EPA and its, you know, global warming and climate change and emissions and all this other kind of stuff, that is at the center of their justification for worldwide government and for greater control of your life, for manipulating and controlling the economy. And so he is attacking them at the very heart of the issue. You know, he was an attorney general who fought the EPA in his state very hard. And now he became head of the EPA. He's not just sitting back and cashing a check like people like Rick Perry at the Energy Department. I don't know. What is Rick Perry doing? This is ridiculous. We shouldn't even have an Energy Department. The Energy Department and the EPA were both created by Richard Nixon. Neither of them should exist. Cleaning up the environment is a private property issue. It's a state issue. It is nothing that the federal government should do. Just because something is good doesn't mean that we want it done by the federal government. Because the federal government doesn't really work too well. And these people tend to not really care too much about privacy issues or legal property issues or whatever. We don't want these problems solved at the federal government. That was never the intention. It's a bad idea. It hasn't worked out well for any of these things. But you got Rick Perry, who famously said, well, I want to get rid of three agencies. And, you know, and the one that he couldn't remember that everybody was laughing about on the debate stage was the Department of Energy. Then he said, well, you know, I wanted to get rid of Department of Energy. Now I are one. And so he's just sitting there, you know, doing nothing. You got a lot of people like that. Or you got people like Rex Tillerson or H.R. McMaster who actively oppose the president's agenda. What are they even doing there? I don't know. There's a lot of holdovers from the Obama administration. There's people that President Trump brought in that don't agree with him at all. But Scott Pruitt does. And because of that, they've been trying to come up with one scandal after the other to drive him out. Latest one is saying, look, he's got a security detail. You know, he has so many threats directed at him and his daughter that he had 13 threats directed against. Previous ones, they had two over their entire administration. In just the first few months, he had 13 people threatening to kill him because of what he's doing in terms of limiting the federal government. And then they have the audacity to come back and say, well, he needs to be impeached because he's got a security detail. He shouldn't have a security detail. Yeah, that's right. Just let the people kill him. All right, we'll be right back. I'm David Icke.
You found it. It's the real news. From the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I got a couple more things I want to say about this current state of the war. The proposed war, the war that would start a new world war. You know, that's not our idea. That was President Trump who said if Hillary Clinton gets her way in Syria, there will be World War III because you're not just fighting Syria. You're fighting Russia. You're fighting Iran. And oh, by the way, that's why France and Britain and Israel and Saudi Arabia want us there, because they want us to fight not just Syria, but Iran and Russia. They want us to do it for them. They want it taken out very, very strongly. They want to get rid of Iran. And this is the formula for a worldwide war. For total disruption and chaos, not just in the Middle East, but throughout the world, because you take down these oil areas and it's going to create chaos throughout the world. We're going to talk about the Comey leaks. We're going to talk about DARPA's life log that was shut down and had Facebook take its place. We're going to talk about what's happening in China. We're going to talk about Paul Ryan. What's going on with Paul Ryan? Where in the world is Paul Ryan? Well, let's hope. I said yesterday when I announced that he was retiring, you know, that they had been just put out the day before. And he said, well, I'm not going to run for office again, but I'm going to stay here and finish out as speaker through January. So I said, the good news is he's leaving, but not soon enough. Well, there's a lot of people in the Republican Party that says, nah, he's going to be gone by July at the latest. We can't have a lame duck sitting around doing nothing. And quite frankly, that has been his role, to make sure that nothing gets done in the Trump agenda. Yeah, he pushed the tax cut through for his Koch brother sponsors, but he has been a fly in the ointment, a stonewall for everything else that President Trump has wanted to do. So good riddance. And the sooner the better if we can get him out of there. But let's get back to Syria real quickly. I wanted to play for you because I was talking about how Tony Blair is now out there pitching for this war again. Emmanuel Macron seems to be the front man that was selling the idea to President Trump, getting his attention even more so than Theresa May with her Salisbury scare. And yet, when we look at this, what is the evidence for this? And we have a video here where that is called into question. Let's play video number three.
Al-Nusra in Syria, they know how to intervene. They know how to manipulate the media. We had the white helmets, a complete propaganda construct in Syria. They end up getting an Academy Award. They know how to intervene in public discourse every day and in politics every day. So that.
Yeah, exactly. And as Peter Koenig points out, poison gas is the weapon of choice for false news nowadays. So as we looked at the back and forth between the debates within the United Nations, you know, I played for you yesterday a couple of different accounts of what happened. Nikki Haley and Theresa May are telling us that the Russians shut down any possibility of investigation. But that's not really what happened. There were two resolutions in the UN for an investigation. The proposal put forward by the United States, by Nikki Haley and by Theresa May and others, said, we're going to create a new special, prosecutor. Yeah, we could call it special prosecutor, kind of like, you know, Bob Mueller. We'll put together a special organization that's going to go out there and do an investigation and write a report and present it to everybody, and that'll be the final say-so. Russia said, no, we'll have an investigation, but we want the evidence brought back here, and we want the Security Council to examine that evidence, and then the Security Council will come up with a resolution. And so they vetoed that. And the Russians vetoed the one where they were going to create a new organization that was going to be totally independent. Yeah. And come up with their own recommendation. You know, just kind of independent, kind of like Bob Mueller. And so that was portrayed by Nikki Haley, by Theresa May, as saying the Russians don't want an investigation. And then you have James Mattis talking about this and saying, I believe, I don't have any evidence, but I believe that it was done. And he said, the difficult thing about this is that the chemicals in question, now, does anybody know what the chemicals in question are? We haven't had any evidence collected of any of that. But supposedly the chemicals are going to degrade very quickly. So if the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, which Russia has invited, then so you come in, that's your area of specialty, you come in and you do an investigation. So if it's going to take a week for them to get in, the evidence is going to have deteriorated by that time. And so we really aren't going to know much. Well, we've already got OPCW inspectors there. They're already on site. And Russia has said the first four chemical weapons experts from OPCW have arrived in Syria. And Russia says they can go anywhere they want in Douma. They can record anything they want. We will facilitate the arrival of the team to anywhere they want in Douma to check whether or not there was use of chemical substances. But it's the papers and the press and the governments that are pushing this. Major papers urge Trump to kill Syrians and risk World War III, reports FAIR.org. They say the World Health Organization says that of 70 deceased people that they examined in the area, 43 had signs of being exposed to highly toxic chemicals. That was the original report that went out, and even FAIR missed it. Because when the World Health Organization put this out, they made all these pronouncements about stuff. And then they said at the very bottom, we would like to have access so we could do our own investigation. And so then it was updated, and they said, well, we updated this to include the fact that the World Health Organization hasn't done an investigation. They're relying on the information of those people we just talked about, the White Hats and the Army of Jihad, that we are now going to go to war to be their Air Force and their Navy of the Army of Jihad. Does that sound like a good idea to you? And so, yeah, they're doing that. New York Times, their editorial on Monday, said that Trump should follow through on his tough talk. And, to not drop bombs, of course, is going to be dangerous. And they said that the world had grown numb to the slaughter of civilians in Syria until it saw pictures from Douma. I think they're still numb to the slaughter of civilians. I think they're still numb because they want to revive, rekindle, keep going this civil war that has already killed 500,000 people. That's why I say I don't understand the distinction between killing people with chemical gas and killing them in masses with, 40 people killed with chemical weapons is worse than 500,000 people killed with bombs and machetes and guns, right? That's their calculus. The Washington Post, same day, encourages the U.S. to risk World War III and kill Syrians in enormous numbers because President Trump will deal another blow to U.S. global leadership if he does not follow through on his declaration that Syria will pay a big price. Oh, yeah, we can't lose our position as global leaders. Global leaders of what? Death and destruction? Ben Piers Morgan. The blood of these poor Syrian children is on Assad's hands and on Obama's conscience. But Trump's main target must be evil Putin, the world's most dangerous man. Pushing for World War III, folks. And waving the bloody shirt of children that we don't have evidence died in this particular time. We do have a lot, hundreds of thousands of kids who've died in Syria based on the fact that we wanted to have regime change, that we started a civil war. It was a proxy war. As Free Thought Project points out, the U.S. intervention in Syria will kill far more children than these chemical attacks. Most Americans don't realize it, but the U.S. military has already been at war with Syria for years with indiscriminate drone strikes that many times kill innocent civilians with thousands of troops also on the ground. This war has been waged without the knowledge of most Americans, without a declaration of war from Congress. Coverage of this war has received in the mainstream media press, both liberal and conservative sources, has suggested that the U.S. military is just there trying to help. However, the State Department documents leaked in 2015 showed the regime change in Syria was a major goal of U.S. establishment since well before Arab Spring. Folks, this goes back a couple of decades. We talked about, I played the clip. Maybe we should play that clip again. Played the clip of Wesley Clark talking about it. And so let's not forget about Afghanistan. Let's not forget about Iraq. Let's not forget about Libya. This is the same thing. They just keep replaying this. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about James Comey and his digs at President Trump. The latest nuggets. This is another one of these books coming out just to make money. Salacious. We've had James Comey now come out pushing his book, and he's teasing some excerpts from it. They've been teasing his interview with George Stephanopoulos. It's going to run on Sunday night. It's going to be a long interview, and as he's been, it's put out. You say that President Trump is like a mafia boss. Well, we'll tell you how maybe James Comey fits that description a little bit better. But Rand Paul, we have up on an article at Infowars.com, Rand Paul warns that Trump haters at the FBI still have top secret security clearance. You know, when we have James Comey talking about how President Trump is the one who has destroyed our institutions, he says there's the corrosive effects of choosing loyalty to an individual over truth and the rule of law. Wait a minute. What about all the lies that you told to get the FISA warrant? What about your agents who were working on their insurance policy to get rid of President Trump? What about all the lies and the obfuscation and the secrecy and the subterfuge and the palace intrigue or whatever you want to call it? All that stuff that was going on. What about your personal loyalty, your loyalty to an individual like Hillary Clinton over the rule of law, James Comey? What a hypocrite this guy is. He says, we're experiencing a dangerous time in our country with a political environment where basic facts are disputed. We should always question what the government tells us. He doesn't like that. That's very dangerous for him. If you question the official story from somebody like James Comey, you're just supposed to believe this liar because he's FBI director. Where basic facts are disputed. Fundamental truth is questioned. Lying is normalized. You know, he did it. Hillary Clinton did it. All these other people, the Obama administration did it. They get away with it. And unethical behavior is ignored, excused, or rewarded. Can you believe that he would say that? When they ignored, excused, and rewarded the unethical behavior of Hillary Clinton? When he and his pals like Mueller and Rosenstein and all these others aided her to get away with all this information? Yeah, thanks to him. Thanks to him and the deep state, thanks to him, he has absolutely eviscerated the credibility of the FBI. And Rand Paul warns that the Trump haters at the FBI still have top secret security clearance. Here's Rand Paul.
What does it mean that two people who've been reassigned for having potential bias against a sitting president now still have the type of access that they can search almost anybody? Is he on that list?
I know of no limits to who they can search. Any American can have their name typed into there, and they do not require a judicial warrant. This is a big fight. We had this fight in the Senate 2 months ago.
Sure.
This is why I was so disappointed, because those of us who want to reform the system want to say that FBI agents should have to go to a judge to get a warrant to look up an American's information. They came back and said, oh, if there's an open FBI investigation, you have to get a warrant. Well, that's actually the least of our concern. We want to know when there's no investigation, when someone just trolling through Republican donors down at FBI headquarters, we want to know they can't do that. And specifically, we asked them, can Peter Strzok and Lisa Page do it? And they said all FBI agents have top secret clearance. They wouldn't answer specifically whether Peter Strzok and Lisa Page have it. But if all agents have top secret clearance and they are still agents, then, you know, there is a syllogism there that sort of indicates that they still have that power.
Yeah, that's the closed secrecy of these people. Everything that they do is hidden and secret from us at every level of government. We're not allowed to know anything. Think about the fact that we had Christopher Wray and Rod Rosenstein until the 11th hour. For half a year, they were stonewalling the House Intelligence Committee. These are people who are cleared to see everything to the highest level. They could even read Hillary Clinton's emails that she put out there for everybody to steal and see, right? They could legitimately do that. These are people who don't have anything hidden from them, except by the deep state, except by the bureaucrats, except by the law enforcement people who don't obey any laws. And so you got the FBI and the Department of Justice saying, oh, we're not going to turn that information over to you. Or we're going to redact it. We're not going to show it to you. And they were saying, we're going to wind up impeaching the FBI director if he doesn't do it. In the last minute, they turned it over yesterday. And so this is the arrogance of these people. You know, it used to just be that you would have that kind of arrogance from the CIA and from the NSA. Going back to the 1960s, when they had the Frank Church hearings on the CIA abuses, when they had the House committee hearing, that was the Pike committee hearing, on abuses, spying on the American people. They focused really kind of on the NSA. That's why you never hear about the Pike committee hearing. Because when the head of the NSA went in and they made a point of asking these agencies. I said, what is your charter? What are you created to do? And so the CIA had a charter, and they talked about that. But when the House committee, the Pike committee, asked that same question to the NSA, said, I'm telling you, we don't exist. They used to be called people that I knew that had formerly worked for the NSA when I was an engineer. They'd say, yeah, we don't talk about that. We say NSA stands for no such agency. And so this guy, you know, when he was the head of the NSA, and actually it was created by an executive order by President Truman. And so he comes into these hearings and he says, well, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you. Well, I'm you know, the House Intelligence Committee. I have authorization to see everything. I'm elected as a representative of the people, and I've been vetted by the government to know all the secrets. I'm not going to talk to you about that. And now we have that situation where that's the attitude of the Department of Justice. It's the attitude of the FBI. It's the attitude of every one of these bureaucracies. They've all become that arrogant, that detached. You have no right to know anything, congressman or senator. Even Dianne Feinstein, who had been the handmaid of the surveillance state, when she started looking into the torture conducted by the CIA, the CIA started looking at her and her staff members. And it's like, what are you doing? You're looking at me? You're looking at me? that wasn't supposed to happen. That was for those little people out there. Not for me. I am senator. I am head of the Intelligence Committee in the Senate. You don't investigate me. How dare you? It's like, you're going to be the first one up against the wall at some point, lady. People like you. It's these people in Congress who won't protect the Bill of Rights. They will be the first. It's that picture where she was so happy. She thought she was going to get all of her gun control legislation. Who knows? Maybe she will if they win the election. But Rand Paul is right. There are Trump haters at the FBI, and they act on that hatred of Trump. It is a politicized investigation. It has lost all of its integrity and respect from the American people, and it's thanks to somebody like James Comey, who's out there now lecturing us about truth and the rule of law and loyalty and a higher loyalty. You know, he's got a higher loyalty to his patron politicians like Hillary Clinton. That's what his higher loyalty is to. And you know, when you talk about this, I said from the very beginning, if this is even true, I don't believe a word that James Comey says. And I think President Trump disputed that, said I didn't ask for his loyalty. If Trump did say something about that, if he did ask for his loyalty one way or the other, I would think that it would go something along the lines that it would be a rhetorical question that President Trump was asking James Comey just to let him know that he knew that he was in the tank. For Hillary Clinton, for the deep state. I know who you are. You're going to be loyal to me, right? Yeah, okay. I know who you are. I'm watching you. It's a rhetorical question, I think, more than anything. But, you know, shouldn't have any loyalty from the FBI, right? He certainly didn't get it from Comey. And boy, to fire a career bureaucrat, that is an unacceptable thing in Washington, D.C. Just look at Andrew McCabe, a man that even the FBI said should be taken out.
Covering the ongoing fight for the heart and soul of America. Broadcasting from deep in the heart of Texas, it's David Knight.
Well, it looks like we have a sequel to Michael Wolff's Fire and Fury from James Comey. A lot of salacious gossip and dishing about President Trump's appearance, personal criticism of him. You know, Comey, if you've seen pictures of him, I mean, he looks like Chewbacca being walked through the aisles because he's so much taller than everybody. He's 6'8". It would be interesting to see a picture of him standing next to Mark Zuckerberg, who's 5'7". But one of the things he said was, well, when I saw President Trump in person, he wasn't as tall as I had seen. You know, he could say that about pretty much anybody. This guy. I mean, so petty the criticisms that he had of him. There he is. There's Chewbacca being walked through the halls with his entourage there. He's kind of crying like Chewbacca right now. But it really is part two of Michael Wolff's Fire and Fury. And it was funny because that was the rage for a week. And then some of the wiser people and the never Trumpers, Democrats and Republicans, said, you know what? We might want to put a little bit of distance between ourselves and Michael Wolff. This thing is going to kind of blow up in our face. And sure enough, it did. They were left with egg on their face. Even Mika Brzezinski and Joe Scarborough had to distance them. And after a while, they got pretty hostile to Michael Wolff about it. It was a real uncomfortable position that they had there. But Comey is their guy. He's their knight in shining armor. He's going to take down President Trump, they hope. But it's really just another rehash of that kind of crap. But he did have one thing interesting to say. He said that classified information would have cast serious doubt on Loretta Lynch's handling of the Clinton investigation. And in this, what he's trying to do is justify the unusual step that he took on the 4th of July weekend to give Hillary Clinton a clean bill of health. Kind of. I mean, this is the thing where he basically destroyed himself publicly, in my opinion. Not just because he got out of the chain of command. In other words, any pronouncements about this investigation were supposed to come from Loretta Lynch. But James Comey comes out and says, well, she committed all these felonies, and I was watching it with my wife and say, I can't believe this. He's admitting she committed felonies. And then he did something even more unbelievable. He said, but I'm not going to prosecute her for it, but don't you try this at home. That's the integrity of James Comey. That's his higher loyalty. His higher loyalty to political patronage is what it's about. That's what he's accusing President Trump of, but that's what he demonstrated in his actions. And the actions of those who were telling him, you know, let's not do this. This was something that had happened a long time before the Loretta Lynch thing. So he's dumping on Loretta Lynch, trying to deflect criticism away from his, from what Peter Strzok had told him. Well, let's give her a pass on this. You can frame it in this particular way and so forth. Let's not go there. That happened well before Loretta Lynch met on the tarmac with Bill Clinton, perhaps rehearsing the questions that Hillary Clinton was going to be asked. But of course, they didn't put her under oath. They didn't record, you know, not going to try to entrap her for anything. Oh, I don't want to do that. We'll go through the motions of this stuff. But he wrote in his new book that classified information could have cast serious doubt on Loretta Lynch's ability to investigate Hillary Clinton's email server in 2016. Comey writes, says ABC News, that he felt obligated to take more of a personal role as the public face of the investigation, rather than deferring to then Attorney General Loretta Lynch, in part because of something involving Lynch that he cryptically refers to as, quote, development still unknown to the American public to this day, unquote. He also wrote, quote, the unverified material would undoubtedly have been used by political opponents to cast serious doubt on the Attorney General's independence in connection with the Clinton investigation. So if there was corruption, he just admitted that he was guilty of obstruction of justice to try to cover that up, didn't he? Oh, so I know that there was something here that was salacious, so I tried to cover that up by going public. Because the American public doesn't need to know, and they still don't know. And they would be really angry if they knew about this. RNC Chairwoman Rona McDaniel has it perfectly down. She said, James Comey's publicity tour is a self-serving attempt to make money and to rehabilitate his own image and to protect him legally, probably. And so I tweeted out yesterday, I said, is Trump a mafia boss like he's alleging here? It was Comey who was general counsel and vice president of Lockheed Martin. Okay. Think about that. General counsel. He's the head lawyer and the vice president. And they committed major lobbying fraud. They got fined, I think it was $4.7 million. That was when he was there, running the place as the chief lawyer. Fraud. Lobbying fraud. And then HSBC, who had long been money launderers to drug cartels and to terrorist groups everywhere. As a matter of fact, the long article that was done by Matt Taibbi and the fact that Eric Holder let them off the hook, he called it banks that are not just too big to fail, but too big to jail. He pointed out that the Sinaloa cartel, that cartel that was run by El Chapo, had their own special dedicated window for money laundering at their HSBC bank. That's how bad the corruption was. That's how bad it was. And I talked to whistleblower Everett Stern, who said after the first time they got caught and they got put on double secret probation, just like Animal House, that they continued to do this, that they made a big show of hiring people and said, we're going to vet this a lot more carefully. And he said what he found, and then he blew the whistle on it, was he said they would have search terms that they would be looking for, particular places or the names of organizations or the names of individuals, and they would be searching through that database. Well, they would go into the database, and they would intentionally put a period or a space so that it wouldn't find a match. So you'd look at it with your naked eye, and you might not notice it. But of course, the computer wasn't going to find a match because it was looking for an exact match. And by putting a little tiny character in there, they could make that match go away. And so he blew the whistle on that. They eventually got just under a $2 billion fine, which was pennies. Pennies on the dollar, the massive amounts of money that they had made. It was an obscenely light penalty. But they were still under the gun for criminal prosecution. Wasn't a statute of limitations on that. And they said, we're going to give you this fine, and we're going to put you on probation, and we're going to possibly still come after you with a prosecution. Well, they hired James Comey, who had been with the FBI before he went to Lockheed Martin and so forth. They hired James Comey, put him on their board. And he was there for about 6 months. So all this stuff happens at the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, they put him on, and he's there for about 6 or 7 months, and then Obama puts him on as FBI director. And surprisingly, in spite of all these additional revelations about how HSBC continued to do this stuff, nothing happened to them. They didn't get a criminal prosecution. And as of December 2017, the Justice Department, I'm sure that Comey had something to do with that, maybe Loretta Lynch, also had connections there, said, you're cleared. You're cleared. December 2017. He was still FBI director there. You're cleared. We're going to, they said, this has been hanging over HSBC. The financial markets talked about this. It's been hanging over their head like the sword of Damocles, that they could face massive criminal penalties and more fines. And now the Justice Department just said, at the end of the Obama administration, you're free to go. No problem. No problem. You haven't been good, but we're not going to do anything about it. So he comes out and says it's a corrosive effect of Donald Trump to choose loyalty to an individual over truth and the rule of law. He also says that we have normalized unethical behavior. It is ignored, excused, rewarded. Now, that's you, Comey. That's you. His book, Higher Loyalty. Yeah, talking about how Trump is demanding loyalty from him. Says things like he's untethered to the truth. He is transactional ego driven about personal loyalty and so forth. But his big issue was that Trump was dishonorable for axing him, cutting his job. See, these people, they think there is one principle that is sacred. You don't ever fire any career bureaucrat in the swamp. And if you do, boy, they're going to come and get you. Just look at even Andrew McCabe. That's his real beef. That's his real beef. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about the real danger, DARPA. All right, welcome back. I'm going to talk about censorship. We'll just talk about the bumper music that we got here because, you know, there's such a thing as fair use and licensing laws. As I said, I want to talk about surveillance, and I said, get ready with Simon and Garfunkel's Ms. Robinson. You know, we'd like to know a little bit about your 404 files. We'd like to help you learn to help yourself because that's the way it's always sold. We've got people in Estonia now being offered free genetic testing in a nationwide experiment. They want to get not only their biometric stuff, but all the way down to the cellular level. They want to create a profile of you because they want to track everything that you do. And it's just to help you from a health standpoint. And so I said, let's play Ms. Robinson. And the crew said, well, last time we did that, Facebook shut down our stream. I'm sick and tired of being censored by that little punk, Zuckerberg. He's shutting down our view counts. He's shutting down notifications. We're getting shadow banned there. We're being censored when we play stuff that is fair use, commenting on it. You know, if you want to watch our program, watch it on a radio station, a television station. Watch it on our own stream or whatever. Let me give you a couple of radio TV stations here. KYAH, 540 AM, Delta, Utah. Welcome, folks. Those people are listening without any say-so from Mark Zuckerberg. They don't have to have his permission. They can listen to radio. Isn't that wonderful? It's broadcast. They don't even know. You know, the DARPA people and Mark Zuckerberg and Google don't even know those people in Delta, Utah are listening on 540 AM to this program, KYAH. So congratulations. And folks, if you're there, support the sponsors of that station. Here's another one, television. You can watch it in Clear Lake City, Texas, KAHO-3TV, Channel 3, KAHO-3 in Clear Lake City, Texas. You can watch the program there, and Zuckerberg can't stop you. And neither can Eric Schmidt. And neither can Michael Hayden or James Brennan or James Comey. Any of those creeps. I'll tell you what creeps they are. And if you want to keep this program going, the thing that funds it are the products that you buy at InfoWarsStore.com. Let me tell you a little bit about some of the specials right now. It's part of this 34-hour InfoWars special broadcast, Stop the New World War. We have, as I pointed out before, Lexapure Breeze, $50 off. $50 off, not 50%, $50 off, big discount there. Mind and Body Challenge, that's our Brain Force Plus, plus Real Red Pill together, 50% off. We have Alpha Power back in stock, 25% off. Bodies now back in stock and 25% off. Cell Force, 50% off. And Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine. We have a limited supply of that. We may not be able to do this again. This may be our last batch of this because we may not be able to get that deep earth source of nascent iodine. Right now, we've got it 25% off. Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine. Okay, check out those products at InfoWarsStore.com. Let's talk then about where the surveillance state is going. Let's look at China, for example, and then we'll get into Facebook, and then we'll get into DARPA's connections to all of this and where this is all headed. China, reports RFA.org, is aiming for near total surveillance, including in people's homes. And they want this to happen by 2020. They have completed their nationwide facial recognition and surveillance network. They've achieved near total surveillance of urban residents. And now they want to take this all the way out to the countryside and not just in public places. They want to go into people's homes, including their homes and including their smart TVs and their smartphones. And as I said before, isn't it nice that Samsung and all these other companies so obligingly put video cameras in the television sets so the television cassettes could look back at you? They just saw this coming. They figured, hey, there might be some need for this by the Chinese authoritarian communist leadership, that they could watch people in their homes. I mean, this was called a conspiracy theory, right? And remember, as we had the contract exposed by Homeland Security just this last week, that they wanted to have a program that was going to follow anybody that was shaping opinion, journalist, or even effective bloggers who had an audience that followed them. People on social media, that's maybe you listening right now. Anybody that was an opinion shaper. DHS had a program out there and said, we want to be able to follow these people in real time. We want to assess them. We want to see what they're doing, what they're saying, how they're affecting, shaping public opinion and so forth. We saw the same thing from the now, fortunately, she's gone, Anne Revell at the FEC. And others who were, you know, pushing for that type of thing. No, actually, I take that back. It was the FCC that was saying, we want to put people in newsrooms and we want to find out how content is being generated. Look, DHS and the FCC should have no say-so whatsoever over content creation or the people who are doing it or following that whatsoever. The First Amendment should prohibit them from being involved in that. But as they were criticized for that, the press secretary for Homeland Security came out and just rattled off a bunch of cliche stereotype labels. Oh, you people are conspiracy theorists, black helicopter, tinfoil hat wearing nut jobs. I mean, he really said that. He listed off all three of those things. Oh, well, gee, press secretary. So I guess, that completely shuts it down because, you know, calling somebody a conspiracy theorist with a tinfoil hat, that, you know, oh, I just go crawl off in the corner. I'm so hurt. When somebody calls me that, I'm honored when you call me that because it tells me that I've really hit a sore spot on Homeland Security when you resort to that kind of childish labeling. But you know, yeah, conspiracy theory, you know, just like George Orwell was a conspiracy theory, and it's crazy to call Homeland Security or President Xi in China. It's crazy to call them Orwellian dictators or wannabe dictators. They said that it's part of their 13th five-year plan. They have these five-year plans in communist countries, and I guess it's about long enough so people forgot what that last failed five-year plan was, but they've had 13 five-year plans. This one is going to succeed, however. The ones where it's about, you know, creating food and everything for the people, those typically don't work, but creating surveillance, oh, they're going to make sure that five-year plan works. So this is their 13th five-year plan. It requires 100% surveillance and facial recognition coverage, and total unification of its existing databases across the country. The thing that's going to come up next is we're going to hear from the Pentagon and DARPA. We have a surveillance gap with China. We're going to have to catch up with them. You realize they can spy on 100% of their people? That they've got all their biometrics, they can identify them facially, and you know, we got to do better than that. They said the southwestern province of Sichuan reported in December they'd completed the installation of more than 40,000 surveillance cameras across more than 14,000 villages as part of the Sharp Eyes nationwide surveillance network. I can just see these little communist functionaries reporting up to President Xi saying, we have completed surveillance of 40,000 surveillance cameras, 14,000 villages, all completed. Hi, hi. You know, march out of the room, goose stepping. Sharp Eyes comes from the Chinese Communist Party's slogan. It says, the people have sharp eyes. Yes, they do. A nation of snitches is now being replaced by technology snitches. Artificial intelligence and programs and other things like that. They don't have to rely on the eyes and ears of other people. That's why William Binney, I've interviewed him several times. He said, you know, what we have going on, he spent a lifetime looking at the Stasi in East Germany. And he said, what we have in America is already far, far worse than East Germany ever was. And people there talk about how there's more than half of the country there were snitches spying on the other half of the people, or the less than other half of the people. But basically everybody was snitching to the government about their neighbor in East Germany. But when you can do it with technology, as William Binney pointed out, you've got something that is far, far more dangerous. Dictators have never had the kind of tools that they have now. And it's not just the Chinese dictators. It's the wannabe dictators that we have here in this country as well. Yeah, you've been noticed, comrade. One person said, a friend of mine in Anhui is under surveillance. He tried to buy a plane ticket to go overseas, but he couldn't leave the country. We can be placed under restriction or persecuted by them, or asked to drink tea with the state security police. Or we can be placed under surveillance at any time. It feels as if we're not free at all. Yeah, it feels like you're not free because you aren't free. And if Americans don't get concerned about this and understand just how bad this is, I had Rand Paul talking about the absence of search warrants against politicians and so forth, and against the president and so forth. Folks, it is way beyond that. Way beyond that. I don't have time to lay this out in this thing, but I'm going to continue with it at the top of the hour. They said the Sharp Eye system will be implemented in tandem with this social credit system that we've been talking about, where they watch everything that you do online. And troublemakers, you know, people who smoke on public transportation, or people who spread false information, fake news, or discredit their leaders. Oh, then you get the special treatment. You get tea with the secret police. You get limited as to your ability to travel. You have your education and job opportunities shut down. And so we look at this. Is this hypocrisy defined? The fact that the government would hold these show hearings about Zuckerberg when they are doing far worse than that. When in actuality, as we'll point out, they may have set this guy up in business. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's the real news with your host, David Knight.
What is it that's going to get us out of this coming surveillance and control grid? And it's coming on pretty fast. As I said, China is going to have 100% coverage, not just to people in public areas and urban areas, but they're going to have coverage in rural areas, and they're going to have coverage in every single home. They're going to have it in the television sets, they're going to have it in the smartphones, it's all going to be connected together, they've got a database for the most populated country in the world, where they can recognize everybody, and they can do it from a long distance. We have been working on that kind of capability here in the United States. They're just the beta test site for this. And they're a little bit more open about it, because they don't have to worry about anybody criticizing them. You criticize them, you just get shut down. You know, as we're looking at this Syrian war situation, as Lee Stranahan pointed out the other day, he says, you know, it's kind of interesting, isn't it, that they shut down Julian Assange before all this stuff began to get really hot. Can you imagine, as he's pointed out, as Kim.com and others have pointed out, we need Julian Assange's voice in this. We need to know what our government is doing. But the American people and the public need to care when they find out about it as well. I'm absolutely appalled at how nothing was done in the wake of the Snowden revelations. Nothing was done. They are still going on with their business as usual. Haven't even really slowed down. They're still on schedule. As much as we have talked about how they violated the rule of law, how they violated your privacy, everybody's concerned about Facebook, accordingly, supposedly. We have the senators and the congressmen. They just wanted their time in the limelight. Very deferential to this guy. They're not going to do anything to Zuckerberg. Not at all. You had some Democrats get upset because some information was given to the Trump campaign. They didn't care that Obama's campaign manager said, we got everybody in the U.S. And then Cambridge Analytica says, well, we got 50 or whatever the number. They've now upped it since then. 50 million people or something like that. That's when they got upset. You mean Trump got information? Well, it's okay if Obama gets all the information. That's how partisan people are. They don't see this as a generalized threat. It is a generalized threat because it's eventually going to be done by the guy that you don't like. And it's going to be done as a matter of course against everybody. So we got John Kiriakou, a whistleblower for the CIA. And we're going to be talking to a whistleblower coming up in the next hour, Joe Bannister. He's going to talk to you about income tax. He's going to talk to you about some of the people who may be things that you need to know as you're filing last minute tax return with the IRS. Where does your money go? Why did he become a whistleblower with the IRS? He was part of the criminal investigation division. You know, these whistleblowers like Joe Bannister, whistleblowers like John Kiriakou, who exposed what the CIA was doing with torture, said, I'm not going to do that. He went to Afghanistan. He captured one of the first Al-Qaeda guys there. But then he realized that torture, A, doesn't work, and B, I think even more importantly, it's unethical. We don't want to become what we fight. That's the great struggle in every war. You don't become the monster that you fight. And so it's the people like John Kiriakou, the people like Joe Bannister, that are going to be the salvation of this civilization, if there is one. If we have the will to do something about this. These people are out there and putting their lives at risk to inform us about the problems in our system. But we have to care enough to change it. And so John Kiriakou delivered a petition for Julian Assange to Ecuador's ambassador in Washington on behalf of veteran intelligence professionals for sanity, VIPs, is what they call it. And, we need to do what we can to make sure that we keep press open and free. I mean, isn't it interesting that as we have all these measures being taken, calling for the direct shutdown by the government now, not just using their proxies like Facebook and Google and Twitter to shut down any sharing of information, any broadcasting of information on social media. No, now you've got the little dictator in California, Dr. Pan, state senator in California, saying we want California to do this for the whole country. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
So we just had the Facebook hearings earlier this week. And as the Free Thought Project points out, it was hypocrisy defined. The government that spies on its citizens is lecturing Facebook CEO for doing the same thing. They point out that during the hearings, it lasted for 5 hours, the word privacy was mentioned nearly 100 times. You had people like Senator Bill Nelson, 75 years old, he said, if you and other social media companies do not get your act in order, none of us are going to have any privacy anymore. That's what we're facing. There's something that the senator could do, but they're not going to do anything about that because they've been working on destroying your privacy far longer than Facebook has. As a matter of fact, they probably pitched this thing off to Facebook, as I'm going to show you just in a moment here. And they point out when individuals create Facebook accounts, they know the photos that they share are not their own anymore. You're creating a public dossier on yourself. And how many times do we have to tell you about people who have been attacked by the police, been thrown out of school or whatever because somebody was offended by what they put on Facebook or Twitter? It's all out there. for people to see. So you're putting all this stuff out there. It's a kind of a strange psychological obsession that I'm sure people are going to go back and make a big study out of in the future. What got us into this? And I think it all goes back, as I've said before, to the Big Brother program, beginning of reality television. It's like, oh, look, cool. These people who are nothing, they don't know anything. They don't haven't accomplished anything in their life. They're not celebrities. They're nothing. And they put them in a room and they consent to be watched all the time. And they don't do anything interesting. As a matter of fact, most of the stuff they do is very disgusting. And yet they become celebrities and everybody looks at, oh, that's great. I'm going to do that on, you know, and then surprise, surprise, Facebook comes along and, there you go. People voluntarily do that. It's kind of like the slide that we got out of the Snowden leaks that was reported in Germany. Der Spiegel reported on it. It wasn't really picked up here in the U.S. very much. And they had a series of three slides. I've talked about this many times. They said, who would have thought in 1984, and they show the iconic 1984 Super Bowl commercial where the lady is running down with a mallet to throw it into the face of Big Brother television set. Who would have thought in 1984, next slide, Steve Jobs holding an iPhone, that this would become Big Brother. And then the next slide, and that people would line up to pay for it. You see all the people lined up at the Apple store to buy that. That's what they did with Facebook. Who would have thought? The Facebook would be Big Brother, and the people would be so eager to participate in it. They say Americans have the ability to decide whether or not they give Facebook access to their data. Well, maybe not. You know, even if you didn't sign up for a Facebook account, they're still getting the information from you. But they do not have the ability to decide whether or not their data is stolen or used by the U.S. government. Yeah, no search warrant required. And they can scrape that public information without talking to you about it. And so then that brings us to the parallel that some people started tweeting around on social media, said, look at this. There was this DARPA project called LifeLog. And there was an article on Wired Magazine, February the 4th, 2004, talking about how, yeah, the Pentagon, DARPA, just scrapped this project called LifeLog. And, oh, look, Facebook was created the same day. They just move it from one place to the other, make it from a Pentagon program that was under a lot of criticism at the time. Because of total information awareness and so forth. We won't do that anymore. But hey, you know, we've got some venture capitalists. I know a guy who knows a guy and he can get you some money and, you know, we can do this. I think that's really what's going on here. But, you know, maybe it's just a coincidence. Maybe the timing was a coincidence. Maybe the connections to NQTEL and to DARPA that you can trace through. And I'm going to show that to you here in just a second. Maybe all that stuff is just a coincidence. But let me tell you what they are doing is exactly what the government wanted to do. So if it is a coincidence, boy, this is the best serendipity for the police state they've ever had. It's like, look at this. We had this project. We had to shut it down over criticism of violation of privacy. And then it just sprung up over here. And they're doing all the stuff that we wanted to do. And everybody's voluntarily participating in it. We don't even have to coerce them into doing it. We don't have to start, but we got everything logged for everybody. So what was this project, this LifeLog project? Wired Magazine reported in February of 2004, it was run by DARPA. It aimed together in a single place everything an individual says, sees, or does. The phone calls made, the TV shows watched, the magazines read, the plane tickets bought, the emails sent and received. Scientists would then plot distinctive routes in the data, mapping relationships, memories, events, and experiences. Folks, at the same time all this stuff was happening with total information awareness, they began doing geospatial intelligence, a branch of surveillance and intelligence. James Clapper hung out there for the longest time. He's been keynote speaker there. He's directing it for a while before he moved up into the CIA and so forth. And in geospatial intelligence, they have sub-branches there of activity-based intelligence, human domain analytics. That's what they're talking about here. That's where they take all this raw data that's being collected by Facebook or by them or whatever, and then they analyze it. And they mine it. They mine your activity. They mine where you are, what you're doing. Human domain analytics. That's all of this stuff right here. HDA. LifeLog's backers said that the all-encompassing diary could have turned into a near-perfect digital memory. Except when they flush you down the memory hole. Because you're a non-person now. Researchers close to the project say they're not sure why it was dropped late last month. DARPA hasn't provided an explanation for LifeLog's quiet cancellation. This is February 2004. A change in priorities, quote-unquote, is the only rationale that agency spokeswoman gave to Wired News. The said LifeLog is latest in a series of controversial programs that have been canceled by DARPA. The Terrorism Information Awareness, or TIA, they had to, first of all, they got criticized for calling it Total Information Awareness. So they said, oh, we'll rename it to Terrorism Information Awareness. So that's what they're reporting here. So I always thought that LifeLog would be a third program after TIA and FutureMap that could raise eyebrows if they didn't make it clear how privacy concerns would be met. So that's where we are today. And you look at this logo that they created. And going, again, talking about Annie Jacobson, The Pentagon's Brain, that's an excellent book. You should read that, talking about the history of DARPA. She said their logo became the focus of much ire. So you got this, the pyramid and the eye that is floating at the top of the pyramid like we got on our dollar bill, you know, these occultic symbols. But then you got a light coming out of the eye looking at the entire world, and it says Total Information, well, it's the Information Awareness Office, and their program was Total Information. They said, this logo says, we spy on absolutely everybody. It's a little more than disturbing to think that somebody that had influence within DARPA once looked at a rough sketch of that and said, yeah, that's cool. Let's do that. So Congress got a lot of pushback. They canceled the Total Information Awareness Program in 2003. DARPA said, we're going to shut down the LifeLog program. And then bingo, Facebook appears. Now, where did all this stuff come from? You know, it's kind of interesting. When you look at it, you might want to go to the document cam. This is my scribbled little org chart here. You know, it's kind of like a movie when they're trying to make the relationships, all the different criminals here. So we've got Facebook down here in the corner. We've got people like Anita Jones, who was director of DARPA. And then she's on the board of Incutel, the venture capital fund of the CIA. You got a guy named Gilman Love. He's the first CEO in 1999 of Incutel. And these guys have a relationship on a board of National Venture Capital, and a guy who is James Breyer. He, through his partnership, Accel, gives Facebook $12.7 million. Now everybody says, oh, well, you know, the angel for Facebook was Peter Thiel. Well, he gave them money in the summer of 2004. So they incorporate this thing the day that LifeLog is shut down. And then in a couple of months, Peter Thiel gives them $500,000. And then we've got, in April of 2005, $12.7 million from Accel. But nobody talks about that. And if you go back and you say, look at this relationship between Accel and this guy who's sitting on these other boards and these other corporations with DARPA and Incutel and so forth, and how Anita Jones was not only director of DARPA, but she was also running the Information Awareness Office, and they shut that down. And that gets shut down right at that time. And then think about the fact that even if there's some information that isn't public, they can still scrape that from anywhere they want because they pushed so hard to get CISPA through. Finally did get it through. They tried CISPA, ACTA, SOPA, PIPA. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Joe Bannister, because that's really, I think, one of the things that was important about the IRS is getting information on you. Kind of sounds like a speakeasy, doesn't it? Remember, it wasn't alcohol prohibition that sent Al Capone to jail. It was the IRS that sent him to jail. We're going to be talking to Joe Bannister. He worked for years as an IRS criminal investigator, and he is the only IRS CID special agent ever to investigate allegations that the IRS illegally administers and enforces the federal income tax. So we're going to talk to him about his story, about whistleblowing and so forth, but I wanted to get him on tax day too. We have him on whenever, you know, taxes are an issue, taxes are changing or whatever. And of course, this is the time of year, as we pointed out earlier in the show. Some guy said, the world's going to end on April the 23rd, I think is the date that he picked. And I said, well, you know, this is supposedly a pastor who has read this in some codes or something in the Bible. I don't believe that for a second. However, I said, if that's true, then this would be a post-tribulation rapture, because it would be happening after April the 15th. So this is a trying time for many people. It's not just the money that you have to pay, but all the paperwork that you got to go through. And you know, Joe, thanks for joining us. You can find him at agentfortruth.com. So joining us now is Joe Bannister. You know, Joe, when I look at this, I think about the fact that as a business, when I ran a business, it was no big deal for me to send in the sales tax information. I knew what my sales were. It didn't take me but a second to calculate sales taxes and send that in. But when I had to do my income taxes, boy, was that a problem. I had to hire an accountant. He created this book, and I had to trust that he had done everything right, and then I had to sign my name on it. And I've thought many times about the fact that Europe gets a lot more money out of their people with their stacked sales tax, that they have the value-added tax, where they keep adding sales tax at every different level of where it changes hands through production. They get a lot more money from their people than we do in terms of a percentage. But I think it's important for the U.S. government to have information about us and have leverage over us. I think that's been a big part of the income tax system from the very beginning. I think I was talking about DARPA, about privacy, about Facebook and so forth. I think that desire to know about the American people and to be able to have leverage and control them, I think that was a big part of our income tax motivation at the very beginning. What do you think?
Oh, I totally agree. I don't know if people really realize, David, how much we report on one another through 1099s and W-2s.
Right. Yeah, and actually, they're locking IRS directory of snitches that they've created here. You know, you got to report on this other guy, or you're in violation.
That's right. And in fact, sadly, the laws, if you actually look at the 1099 laws, for example, they really don't require the average American to file a 1099 on someone else. But like, you know, monkeys and zoo animals, we just presume that if somebody told us that if it's over $600 a payment, we have to file a 1099. Well, if you actually look at the regulations, you find that that's not even the case. Of course, there's hundreds of pages of regulations that you have to go through to figure it out.
Yes.
But we've done that, and you can see that it's just another scam where the IRS is expecting us to report on one another, when in fact, if we knew the law and didn't do it as often as we do, the IRS would be flying blind a lot more than it does.
And they threaten everybody with it, create this fear, because the system is so complex. I forget who said it, but somebody once said, a law that is sufficiently complex is the same as having no law at all. Because somebody can come in and say, well, according to my opinion, and you can't disprove it because it's so convoluted, so complicated, that it's difficult to say, well, no, that's not what the law says. Well, no, in my opinion, it does say that, because it's so complicated, it gives them wiggle room to basically do whatever they wish. And when we look at financial regulations, I mean, think about the fact that we had the pedophile that was a long-serving Speaker of the House.
Dennis Hastert.
Yeah. His name escaped me for a moment there. But he didn't go to jail for being a pedophile, because they create very short statute limitations on that. He went to jail because he started taking out money to pay off a guy that was blackmailing him to go public. And because he was making structured, after they questioned him about it, he didn't want to tell them what it was. And then he started making small withdrawals so that he would escape their notice. And so said, you're taking your money out of the bank, which is not laundering any money. I mean, if you're trying to put it in to try to escape detection, you know, but when you're withdrawing the money that's already been put in the banking system and you're taking it out in small increments like that, that's what they sent him to jail for. So the financial crime system is such a complex network, and it is used to get anybody. That's why it's so dangerous with what's going on with President Trump right now, that Mueller is going in and trying to look at his financial dealings, because those laws are so pervasive and so complex, you can get anybody on anything.
Well, two things about that. First, we've discussed this before, where the money laundering laws, which include these structuring laws, which is what you're talking about. Structuring is where you take deposits or withdrawals and you structure them in a manner that will avoid the reporting requirement. And those laws, you know, people think, oh, we really went after the drug dealers with these laws. We need to find out all these things. The fact of the matter is, it was really designed to be surveillance and economic surveillance on the American people.
Yeah.
And as you know, the Hegelian dialectic, you know, problem, reaction, solution, the government creates the problem of the drug smuggling and everything. And then they propose a solution. They tell you that we're going to surveil everyone so that we can take care of this drug problem. The drug problem's still here, but we're all being surveilled with all of our economic activity. The second thing about Dennis Hastert is I and another group of people approached him shortly after I resigned from the IRS to present these facts about the income tax and the way that it's illegally enforced. And little did we know, way back in, you know, the year 2000, 2001, that he was a child molester, yeah. And he was structuring payments to try to cover it all up. So obviously he wasn't too interested in learning the truth about the income tax.
Kind of interesting. He got hoisted by his own petard. You know, the system that he supported actually wound up exposing him and sending him to jail. That's kind of interesting. Yeah. Well, you know, we look at this and we understand, you know, how in many ways this is a trick. It's a deception and so forth. But then there's also the other aspect that if you don't want to spend your entire life fighting the IRS, you try to find a way as much as possible to be at peace with other people. You know, what can you do at the last minute? Let's get into this a little bit. And then we got a lot of tips from you about what to do here. We'll have to continue it on the other side, but just give us, some information. If you're going to be filing, what is the deadline for this year? Because, 15th is going to fall on a weekend.
That's right. It's April 17th. I'm sorry. Tuesday. April 15th falls on a Sunday, and whenever the due date falls on a Saturday, a Sunday, or a legal holiday, then it's the following business day. Now, what most people outside of D.C., which is the majority of us, don't maybe realize is that Monday is Emancipation Day, and it's only celebrated, or at least it's only a federal holiday in Washington, D.C. proper. Nevertheless,
I don't feel emancipated when I got to be filing my taxes here. That's kind of an irony, isn't it?
Right. So the reason that it's Tuesday rather than Monday for the tax deadline is because of Emancipation Day being on Monday.
Wow. Wow. So we get an extra day this year. That's the emancipation. One more day. But of course, the amount of days that you have to work each year, before you are keeping the money yourself, that keeps stretching further and further and further. And even though they're getting more and more revenue, reaching record revenue every time they measure it, every quarter they measure it, we still keep having record deficits because they keep spending it even faster than they bring it in. Stay with us. We've got more tips for you, and we're going to be talking about his whistleblower experience when we return. Joe Bannister. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Joe Bannister. He was a criminal investigation special agent for the IRS. We're going to talk to him about some tips, ways to keep you out of trouble. But we also want to put this in a bigger perspective. We're going to talk about what's going on with spending, with the deficit, with interest rates, because, you know, the income tax is created at the same time they created the Federal Reserve, you know, to service each other and so forth. And then let's talk about his particular case as a whistleblower, the IRS. And I'm not advocating that you go fight the IRS on your own and try to solve this system as a lone crusader. But we do need to collectively understand this system and what it is doing to our country and push for a change. And we need to have a different system. And we need to do this collectively. We need to fight, as G. Edward Griffin points out, we need to work collectively for our individual rights. I think that's really what needs to be done. And that means we need to understand what's going on. But let's give us a few more individual tips there, Joe. You were talking about the fact that I didn't realize we had an extra day this year because I didn't know about Emancipation Day in Washington, D.C. So we got till Tuesday to get that in. But tell us a little bit more in terms of maybe some last-minute tax tips that we got here.
Well, the one problem, of course, is because December 31st would be the last day that anybody can really do anything about the 2017 year. This deadline coming up on Tuesday is really just filing the form or an extension, because you can't get the form done by Tuesday. And of course, there is a form 4868, where people can extend for 6 months until October 15th. And the thing that, of course, the IRS always reminds everyone that if you file an extension, it's an extension of time to file a tax return, but not an extension to pay.
Right, right. Do you think that makes any difference in terms of audits if people file an extension to delay things? Or is that just something that's out there for procrastinators?
Yeah, I don't think it really increases the audit risk myself. If you put your tax return together, you know, haphazardly because you're so rapid, mm-hmm. you can end up causing more problems for yourself that way. So I think it's better to take the time if you need the time. And 6 months, of course, can pass pretty quickly, but it's certainly better than if you're not ready by Tuesday.
Sure.
Another thing that people need to keep in mind is something called a mileage log. Anyone that has any kind of sale, outside sales, or any business where they're traveling, people are notorious for not getting around to keeping track of their mileage. Yet the IRS in its graces gives you, a deduction of 53 cents. I think it's 53.5 cents for 2017 per mile. And so what people generally do is they neglect to keep a log of their mileage, and then they get to the end of the year, they go to their tax guy or gal, and they're like, well, I didn't keep track of that. So they estimate, and they frequently estimate way too low, and they just, cheat themselves out of a larger deduction. So, there's even nowadays with everyone on their smartphones, there's even apps that you can get on your phone that you can keep track of your mileage. So most people are on their phone anyway.
Yeah.
It doesn't take but a little bit of extra effort to just log in your mileage. The thing about a mileage log is it has to be in writing. If you don't have your evidence of your mileage in writing, the IRS is not going to accept the deduction. You can deduct it, but if you ever get audited and you don't have the written proof of your mileage, they're going to disallow that in a heartbeat. So,
they would disallow really an important. App then? Would they disallow
Pardon?
An app then?
Well, of course, you'd want to download that information onto another device or a hard piece of paper so the IRS doesn't have to look at your phone to look at your mileage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah. But of course, you're not going to be given the privileges of Lois Lerner when they ask for information from the IRS. They said, oh, we lost the stuff. We lost the records. Remember when that happened? They don't ever accept that from you as an individual. But that's the excuse that they offered when they were looking at what they were doing with the taxpayer status of conservative groups.
Some of the other stuff too, but not us.
Yeah, some of the other stuff too. Obamacare penalty. I think that's something that is out there. A lot of people are wondering what the status of that is right now.
Well, sadly, and I was even surprised because I didn't look at the details quite as much. But the Obamacare penalty is going away, but it didn't go away for 2017 or 2018. So relief does not come until 2019.
Wow.
So basically 2017 has already come and gone. And therefore, whether or not you had health insurance and complied with the Obamacare mandates is still going to be an issue. And you can't go back and change the past. So, hopefully, most people had some kind of insurance. There are exceptions. For example, MediShare, which some of my family members are involved with, some of these health sharing ministries are one of the exceptions. If you were without health care insurance for, I think it's less than 3 consecutive months during the year, or if your earnings are so low that you don't even file a tax return under anyone's expectations. But anyway, people may not realize that 2017 and 2018, you're still having to mess with the whole Obamacare, web.
Wow.
And so don't think that just because of hearing on the news that, President Trump signed an executive order that all those problems go away. They're not quite, we're not quite out of the woods yet.
Yeah, I think he sent them an order right away, and he said, don't pursue this or whatever, but I think they just ignore that, right? They're still gonna go ahead and do it anyway.
So far, the IRS appears to be wanting to, ignore, what the president, directs them to do.
Yeah.
The other thing is some people were not wanting to even give the information on the electronically filed return. And if you don't answer that question about the, health, whether you had health care insurance or not, the IRS says they're gonna reject your electronically filed return.
Hmm.
So, that may be bad news for those who thought, half a year ago or a year ago, hey, I'm done with this Obamacare mess. But we're not quite out of the woods yet.
Let's talk a little bit about the things that might trigger an audit, because nobody wants to go through that. Pope said there's no hell, but because he obviously has never been through an IRS audit. But tell people how they can avoid that particular kind of purgatory.
Well, one of the things that people can get into a lot of trouble with is if they have contractors, which is, so much easier for a business owner. If you are paying a contractor and I don't mean like a building contractor. I mean like you're paying somebody in the just the simplest way, which we should all be able to engage in any time. Someone gives you a service and you pay them for that service. It's a simple contract. We have a constitutional right and a God-given right to contract with one another. But the IRS likes to turn that relationship into from a contractor contract situation into an employee-employer situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they do that is that the IRS can come down from on high, tell the business owner, hey, you see these three contractors that you paid money to? We're going to designate them as employees. And because we say they were employees, they should have had withholding of federal income tax and Social Security tax and Medicare tax. And so we are going to hammer you with the taxes you should have withheld and plus penalties, which is called 100% penalty. They double the taxes that you should have withheld.
Wow.
And then they add interest to that too. So
interest,
they can really devastate a business owner just by arbitrarily designating that someone was an employee rather than a contractor.
What about home office expenses? Because I've always heard that that was something that triggered audits. Is that your experience when you were working for the IRS?
It can, but there are, people can also forego deductions for home office when in fact they really should go ahead and, you know, take the plunge. Just make sure that your expenses are well documented. You want to make sure that your home office area is exclusive to what your business. In other words, you don't want to have it in your
just
bedroom.
Just be real careful that you do it right. Don't be intimidated into not doing it. Just be real careful that you dot every I and cross every T if you're going to do that. All right, when we come back, we're going to put this in a little bit of a perspective, and we're also going to talk to Joe about his experience as a whistleblower. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Joe Bannister, agentfortruth.com. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Joe Bannister. You can find his website, Agent for Truth. He was with the IRS as a Criminal Investigation Division Special Agent. He investigated allegations that the IRS was illegally administering and enforcing the federal income tax. We're going to talk to him about his experiences as a whistleblower. And we're going to put some of this into perspective. Before we get to that real quickly, we're going to talk a little bit about Reagan's Grace Commission findings. Joe sent this to me. These are three interesting things that came out of a report that Ronald Reagan put together that really, when we look at what's happening today in terms of spending, in terms of soaring debt, in terms of increasing interest rate, the waste that is being done, these are things that are still very important. But before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you about the products that we have on sale at InfoWarsStore.com, part of our 34-hour InfoWars special broadcast, Stop the New World War. And you can find these at InfoWarsStore.com. We've got Immune Gargle, the combo, all sizes of Immune Gargle you can get for 50% off. And again, that's our newest Super Blue product line. We have the mouthwash and we have the toothpaste. They all have nano silver in them, and so does the Immune Gargle. You can spray that in your mouth, freshen your breath, and also you can swallow it. It's a nano silver. Fights bacteria and virus. You can also put it on your hands to kill virus and so forth. We also have Alpha Power. It's now back in stock, 25% off. So is Bodies, back in stock and 25% off. Cell Force, 50% off. Our Alexa Pure Breeze air filter is 50% off. Very quiet, very effective. A great way to clean the air in your house because the air can get pretty dirty in a house. You can seal it up during, especially during winter and summer to try to heat or cool it, and even this time of year when you got pollen. It's a great thing to have the Alexa Pure Breeze filter. We have that at our house, and we really like that. And finally, Survival Shield X2 Nason Iodine. You can get that 25% off. Limited supply. We may not be able to continue this because we've lost our source of Nason Iodine, looking to find a replacement source for that. But you can get Survival Shield X2 Nason Iodine right now, 25% off. And, you know, Joe, as we were talking, I said we need to do a break as we come into this section. You said that you like Nason Iodine as well.
I certainly do. Been taking it for almost a year, and it's about down here to the bottom of the label, so I got to order some today before everybody else does.
There you go. Yeah, get the discount and get it before it goes out. That's great. Well, thanks for letting us know that. And, you know, when we look at what's going on with the taxes, you know, what role does the income tax play in terms of funding the federal government? We've got, here's an interesting statistic. In March, we had a record of $210.8 billion collected. That's a record for any March that we've ever had. But then the deficit was also incredibly high, almost the same amount of money that we collected, $208.7 billion. But the interest rates are also being hiked by the federal government, by the Federal Reserve, the private institution that was created at the same time we created the income taxes. So that's a big part of the problem. Talk to us a little bit about the things that Reagan's Grace Commission, the things that you sent to me about this and how those apply today.
Well, President Reagan commissioned a group of business leaders, and I mean, we're talking, you know, billionaires, at least at the time back in the 80s. Peter Grace, who was the candy fortune, and they all got together and they studied the federal government, how it brings in revenue, how it spends its money, you know, as a business owner would if they were coming into a business to acquire it or keep it running or make it prosper. Mm-hmm. And so, this report, I mean, it's a long report, but of course the part that I really keyed in on was the part about the income tax. And I don't know if you're going to be able to show that on the screen, but listen to this. Resistance to additional income taxes would be even more widespread if people were aware that one third of all their taxes is consumed by waste and inefficiency in the federal government, as we identified in our survey. It's actually on page 14 of that document that you're showing. Another one third of all their taxes escapes collection from others as the underground economy blossoms in direct proportion to tax increases and places even more pressure on law-abiding taxpayers, promoting still more underground economy, a vicious circle that must be broken. And then lastly, with two thirds of everyone's personal income taxes wasted or not collected, 100% of what is collected is absorbed solely by interest on the federal debt and by federal government contributions to transfer payments. In other words, all individual income tax revenue are gone before one nickel is spent on the services which taxpayers expect from their government. So
we're just on a big interest-only loan. And it's right. A loan, that money that's being loaned to us by the federal government that just prints paper money, or by the Chinese government, which, you know, after a while, they're maybe going to get tired of that and just call that loan in, you know, like a bank would.
That's right. And what's sad is, you know, so many people seem so worried about the government, like, oh, how will the government survive? And I think that this report is one example of how experts looked at the situation and see that if the government needed our money so bad, they wouldn't be wasting it the way they do. And so we all chase our tails every year, go through this tax issue, all these obligations, and find that this is what they're doing with our money. Now, that's not a reason not to pay the income tax, because, of course, that can't be used as a defense. But it certainly can be a motivating factor for the American people to stop feeling sorry for the government and start feeling sorry for all of us who, sweat and work and try to provide for our families and make our country better. And we've got this ball and chain of an income tax that is doing nothing for us, nothing to benefit the country or us.
And that's point number two, is why they're so paranoid about cryptocurrencies, because they, as you pointed out earlier, they've got this interlocking web of informants, everybody informing on everybody else, because you're part of that banking system there. People escape the banking system. If people escape the fiat currencies of the central banks and the central banks who can raise interest as they're doing on us right now, even though we have record tax receipts, we have spending that is going crazy, and we've got rapidly escalating interest rates. All this looks very bad. You know, we're talking about waste. One of the things I saw today that really hit home, $1 million study to study 3-year-old transgenders. I mean, this is the way your government is spending money. It's absolutely amazing that we see this kind of stuff. But talk to us a little bit, in the time we got left, talk to us a little bit about what you blew the whistle on when you looked at the illegally administered income tax.
Well, I put on my website, you know, because obviously there's so little time to devote to these matters, but people need to do their homework after the fact. But if they go to agentfortruth.com in the Learn More section, I've got a section called What's This All About? And there I try to make it as concise as possible with links to documents so that people can, you know, take a little time. It really wouldn't take long, maybe a half hour or an hour. Mm-hmm. Where people can learn, what's this all about? Why is Joe Bannister screaming about the income tax all the time? You know, what have we done in the past to try to expose this issue? Does Joe Bannister have any credibility? Do the people in the tax movement have any credibility? Of course, InfoWars, Alex, yourself, you've been really helpful to open the eyes of the American people to so many, you know, corrupt practices that the federal government has. To me, the income tax is at the core, the income tax and the Federal Reserve System, because those are the levers of control that the powers that be have over the American people. And they're also levers that really do control us and make it difficult to, you know, squirm out of this straitjacket that they have us in. But as you said earlier, David, there, you know, we always have to have hope. We always have to work towards justice and getting rid of these corrupt practices, these chains that are on us. We can't give up. It's a tall order. And as you said, you know, I don't advocate people one-on-one taking on the IRS because, you know, fighting the 800-pound gorilla alone generally doesn't turn out too well. But
we're not going to win because they've got their court, so they're basically going to, if you've got a legal point, they're just not going to, well, we're not going to listen to that. I mean, we've seen that with the Bundy trial. Say, well, we're not going to let you bring a witness in. We're not going to let you know about the criminal actions of these people that were in separate trials were prosecuting. You know, same thing happened in the Silk Road case with Ross Ulbricht. So they'll railroad you in these courts. You're not going to be able to get a fair hearing there. But I think the real issue here is for people to take a look at what you've got there at Agent for Truth, to understand, take the time to understand that, just like we can't tell everybody what Ed Snowden revealed in a short period of time. We need to audit the Fed. We need to audit the IRS, you know, the way they administer the tax code and so forth. And people need to care about their liberty, or we're never going to do this. So we've got to do this collectively as a group. We're not going to be able to stand up one-on-one to this system. We can try to work within it, but we have to understand it, and we have to change it. And a key part of that is going to agentfortruth.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Joe. And that concludes this part of our 34-hour broadcast. Alex Jones is coming up next. Stay with us.